The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Ross, Judge Larkin, Judge Papaki, the Honorable Kevin G. Ross presiding.
Good morning and welcome to this next argument in our January 26, 2022 panel, the Court of Appeals. The next matter on our calendar is Hennepin County or Hennepin Healthcare System versus Ask Me Minnesota, Council 5. Each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes for appellant's counsel if you'd like to use that for rebuttal. Please do be mindful of the fact that technology sometimes can be glitchy. We've been operating smoothly this morning, but in the event that you have a difficult time hearing or seeing anyone or it appears that there's any kind of a technological issue, just alert us and we'll pause the proceedings and try to get things sorted out with the technology. Even though we can see each other and we can see each other's names, we're only making an audio recording, not a video recording of the proceedings and posting it online. So please do remember to state your name as you commence each leg of your argument. Counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready to proceed, you have the floor.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, Martin Munich on behalf of the appellant, Hennepin Healthcare System. Obviously, we're here on a motion to vacate an arbitration award, and arbitrators do have much latitude in interpreting a contract. But fundamentally, they have to remember that they are interpreting a contract, a bargain that the parties reached. And they cannot, as the courts say, dispense their own brand of industrial justice, ignore the contract, and just come up with a resolution that they think would be more fair.
There's sometimes a fuzzy line between an arbitrator exacting sort of industrial justice, as the courts say, and interpreting a contract. So why isn't the arbitrator's attempt to reconcile Article 42 with Article 3 a form of interpretation of the contract?
Your Honor, the Supreme Court said a number of times in describing the limited role of a court reviewing an arbitrator that really the only things the court should be looking for is there something specific in the language of the contract or something specific in the party's submissions that would preclude the arbitrator from ruling as he did. And those are both present here, and hope to get into that. But those will both show it isn't a matter of reconciling. These were two independent clauses that really had nothing to do with each other. As far as the parties' submissions, I'll start with that. There were many stipulations between the union and the hospital describing how the subcontract workers are not employees of the hospital. And one step 12 said both parties agreed that the contract workers are not subject to the labor agreement's terms. But yet the arbitrator found precisely the opposite when he said they are subject to contract workers are subject to their terms. These are standalone provisions. It's not reconciling. If you look at the language, and this gets to where specific language prevents the arbitrator from deciding as he did. Article 42 says nothing in this agreement shall prohibit or restrict. I don't know how broader you can be, but what he did was he went and reached out and found something and claimed to reconcile it. But that clause says nothing in the agreement. And he ignored that. It's not a matter of reconciling. It's a matter of ignoring clear language. And that clear language in the parties' submissions preclude the decision he came to. I would also say, and we haven't talked about in our briefs perhaps enough, Section 2 of Article 42, the subcontracting contract article. Section 2 talks about what will happen if the subcontracting causes layoffs. By talking about that contingency, it's obviously an acknowledgement that the subcontracting could cause layoffs. And if it does, unfortunately, there are a number of procedures to follow to try and mitigate that. 90 days notice to the union, the employer agrees to meet and confer, not negotiate, but meet and confer to try and minimize the damage. And then ultimately, the employer has an obligation for reasonable good faith efforts to try and place anyone impacted by the layoffs. If a six-month limit on subcontracting makes no sense with layoffs. You don't lay people off if the other workers are only going to be there 6 months. I think it's good to contrast.
Just to be clear, you're pointing it out as a matter of our interpretation of. You're pointing out Section 2 to inform our interpretation of Section 1, not to suggest there are any layoffs involved in this particular case.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, absolutely correct. Fortunately, this case, there were no layoffs, no bargaining unit person lost a job, but you're exactly right. Trying to read those two in context, and that the second section reinforces the conclusion that subcontracting can be permanent. It can be a little piece of the business sent out to an outside company. And I think a way to bring that home, we cite in our brief a case, the city of Baxter. It's unpublished, but it has a subcontracting clause which starts out like the one in this case. Nothing shall restrict the employer, the city's right to subcontract. But then it adds, provided that the subcontracting doesn't lessen bargaining unit work. So that provided is the union with respect to the city's protection that there won't be layoffs, that the subcontracting has to be something new or different. It can't take away bargaining unit work. We don't have that. I mean, in City of Baxter, the court recognized that the city waived some of its inherent managerial rights with respect to contracting. We don't have that in our Article 42. In fact, we have the opposite of that because it makes provisions for what would happen if there were layoffs. The language, subcontracting is an inherently managerial right. They're both the union and the hospital and the district court judge. I'll quote the same passage from the New Ulm case. The New Ulm case, a school district subcontracted its food workers. They wanted to hire a company to run the cafeteria up in the school. Can't remember if it was high school or junior high, maybe both. And there, that subcontracting would have wiped out the entire bargaining unit. I mean, that's not the case here. No one was laid off, and the bargaining unit is between two of them, the two bargaining units, 1,300 employees. So there was never a question that a bargaining unit would be wiped out. But also in the New Ulm case,
is there anything in the, given the what you've described as an unlimited authority of the appellant in subcontracting, it seems like your position is the employer could subcontract in a fashion that would wipe out the members of the collective bargaining agreement.
If, well, no, Your Honor, if it was something that did destroy the whole bargaining unit, then the union would have, I think, two routes of recourse, that it would be an unfair labor practice that came up in the recent decision with the firefighters versus the city of Brainerd, where the city acknowledged that its reorganization, I guess technically they didn't call it subcontracting, but pretty close. If it wiped out the bargaining unit, that would be an unfair labor practice. And again, in New Ulm, it wiped out the bargaining unit. But in New Ulm, the contract was silent on subcontracting.
You said there were two distinctions. Two reasons why it wouldn't happen.
Oh, one, the recourse that they would have for an unfair labor practice. Two, this provision has existed for at least 20 years, and there's never been anything close to that.
Well, and there's also section two. The employer would have to then engage in some effort to mitigate any harm if there would be essentially a wipeout, or which I suppose wholesale layoffs would constitute a wiping out, as you describe it.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely. And the arbitrator, even though he ruled against the hospital, said that the hospital had been using subcontracting generally in a reasonable, good faith manner and for business decisions. And ultimately, if the union is really worried about this, I mean, here no one was laid off. Subcontracting has never come anywhere close. I mean, this is the party's agreement.
We're clear, as I understand the issues that the arbitrator was considering, the union didn't present the issue that we're talking about now as a matter for the arbitrator to decide, which is whether the city was required to negotiate under Section 2 or the healthcare system was required to do anything other than what it is. It seems like it was a limited question in front of the arbitrator.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we didn't get to Section 2 because there were no layoffs. And as you mentioned before, my discussing Section 2 is just to help inform.
Right. In other words, I guess my point was, it didn't seem to me as if the issue, the New Ulm issue, the problem in New Ulm was presented to the arbitrator in this case, even though there was discussion about it. Maybe I'm misinterpreting what the issues were and how the New Ulm case might apply.
The New Ulm case raised a grievance, but in the New Ulm case, the labor agreement was silent as to subcontracting. There was no counterpart to Article 42. The parties have bargained, they've reached an agreement, and even though I would suggest that New Ulm holds that the decision to arbitrate is inherently managerial, it and some other cases talks about the impact, the effects,
The decision to subcontract, not the decision to arbitrate, right? I think you were.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say arbitrate? Yes. The decision to subcontract is inherently managerial, but the parties may have to bargain the impacts or effects, same thing, of the subcontracting. Well, that's what Section 2 is. They've already bargained
when I read the New Ulm case, it looks as if it was at the moment of subcontracting, not the moment of the negotiation of the collective bargaining agreement, that the New Ulm case is saying there needs to be some further negotiation with the decision. If you're going to decide to subcontract at that moment, as I read the New Ulm case, that's the moment where there's a need to negotiate between the employer and the union.
I think that's right, Your Honor, but that was because there was no provision like Article 42 already addressing that.
You're saying Section 2 demonstrates that there was the negotiation for a subcontract decision.
For the impacts, yes, long ago. And if the union wants to change this, their recourse is the bargaining table. If they're worried that somehow down the road, the hospital, which there's been no indication that they would use the subcontracting clause to the extent that it would really harm the bargaining unit, they can ask to change that language at the bargaining table. And also, all the employees of Hennepin are essential employees, meaning they can't strike, but they can go to interest arbitration. So even if the hospital wouldn't agree to change Article 42, if the union wanted to pursue it, they could still try and persuade an interest arbitrator, someone that sets the new contract, as opposed to here, we're talking about, was there a violation of the existing contract? I see my time is virtually up. Thank you very much.
Are there any further questions from panel members? Thank you, Mr. Munich. You will have 5 minutes of rebuttal time if you'd like. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court. Josie Hegarty for respondent, AFSCME Council 5. To begin, I just want to stress what deference is owed to the arbitrator's decision here. Well, this court makes the de novo decision. It's not bound by the district court's findings. The bases for vacating an arbitrator's award are incredibly limited. And here, when the case is brought on the basis that the arbitrator exceeded his authority, this court is obligated to award every reasonable presumption of validity and finality to the award, can only set aside the award if the objecting party clearly shows the arbitrator exceeded his authority. And the arbitrator is the final judge of law and fact for the findings found in the award itself. In this case, the arbitrator, one of the key findings was that the Article 3, the definition for temporary workers, what the purpose of that article was, is to provide the union with assurances that its representational rights will not be undermined by the employer using short-term contract workers to fill roles that would otherwise be filled by employees who would be in the bargaining unit.
Well, does the arbitrator have authority to do that? If doing that requires disregarding the definitions that are provided in the collective bargaining agreement for employee and temporary worker?
Sorry, could you ask that question again?
Sure. You were suggesting we should defer to the arbitrator's interpretation of this, of the contract. But if the arbitrator's interpretation of the contract could only be reached by disregarding the contractual terms, employee, temporary worker, or misconstruing those terms, would we then afford deference to the arbitrator?
Well, I mean, it's not that the arbitrator misconstrued those terms. The stipulations and the arbitrator award itself, which includes all of the stipulations, yes, we agree with appellant that the contract workers are not employees, but the application of the understanding found of Article 3, temporary employees, doesn't apply to the contract workers. What that purpose is to protect the union's bargaining rights.
Well, how can that be so? I'm trying to reconcile Article 3's definition of temporary employee with Article 42, which seems to contemplate rather extended employment, or not employment, but intended extended engagement far beyond 6 months.
And the finding for the purpose of Article 3 is, I mean, the relevant language before the arbitrator were Article 3, Article 42, some other articles, but those are the primary pieces. And the arbitrator looked to Article 3, asked what is the purpose of this language.
Right, I'm trying to ask you, forget what the arbitrator did. I'm asking you, as a matter of logic, how can the arbitrator or anyone reach the conclusion that temporary employee, that any restriction about temporary employment is related to or restricts subcontractor engagement in terms of time, since the subcontractor arrangement that was bargained for by the union contemplated even potentially a layoff situation, which I presume you would agree would extend only to permanent or certainly relationship longer than 6 months.
And I would say again that it's about the purpose of Article 3 itself.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand why it's logical to overlay Article 3 in the limitation of temporary worker duration with Article 42, which apparently contemplates no such temporal restriction. How is that logical?
It's logical because the arbitrator found that the purpose found for Article 3's that language existence in the contract, that purpose created a conflict with the language of Article 42.
How is that logical that there is a conflict if Article 42 contemplates an arrangement that extends far beyond 6 months?
Because
what would be the basis for using Article 3 to limit Article 42 when Article 42 could not possibly have a 6 month limitation?
Because the arbitrator found that the long term use of temporary of contract workers to serve purposes that would be otherwise filled by bargaining unit members undermines the union's bargaining rights. And so it's not a limitation on all contract workers. It is a limitation specific to contract workers serving roles that would otherwise fall within the bargaining unit.
Section 2 expressly contemplates exactly that. Section 2 of Article 42.
Section 2 contemplates layoffs.
Section 2 expressly contemplates the overlap between subcontracted work and employees' work. And instead of using that provision to make any kind of concern, make any conclusions about the temporal nature of a subcontract relationship, the arbitrator went to the temporary employee definition. And I'm trying to understand why that is, and I'm not sure I understand that yet. Why would you use Article 3 to impose a temporal limitation on Article 42, which clearly does not include a temporal limitation for overlap work, the very overlap that you're talking about?
Well, the overlap described in Article 2 is specifically about layoffs, and we've agreed there are no layoffs are at issue in this matter. But also, part of the purpose of labor arbitration is because the ways that labor agreements are carried out are not always specifically what is written in the text of the agreement. The arbitrator has the authority to look to the practice, to look to the way things have been carried out over time. And that is how that Article 3, the purpose to protect the union's bargaining rights, was found. And because of that explicitly found purpose, which this court is bound by, that is why a conflict was found between Article 3 and Article 42.
But with Section 2 of Article 42 would indicate, at least suggest to me, that the union did have exercise its bargaining rights with regard to any limit on subcontracted work that overlaps with union employee work. Doesn't it?
It does to some extent, but
doesn't it to the extent that we're talking about here, which is the temporal nature? I mean, it seems to me that if the union was wanting a limitation on the duration of subcontracted work that overlaps with union work, it would exist in Article 42 somewhere, and there wouldn't be a need to borrow from a definitional provision which doesn't have any apparent relationship to subcontractor work.
Well, another reason why arbitrators have such broad authority in interpreting contracts is because a labor agreement, by its nature, cannot contemplate every possible scenario that might come up.
And right, but it seems to have contemplated this one.
Well, it didn't. What was contemplated was subcontracting. That is what Article 2 is about.
Well, it contemplated subcontracting for work that overlays the work that union members are doing.
Only to the extent that that includes layoffs.
No, the Section 2 just gives a limitation. If it includes layoffs, here's what you have to do. If it doesn't include layoffs, there doesn't appear to be anything that the employer or the manager has to do. Help me define in the language of Article 42 support for your position. Can you do that in Article 42 without going to section or to Article 3, the definition of temporary worker? And by language, I mean anything that gives the faintest hint that there's any attempted or intended restriction.
Just trying to pull up the language to Article 42. Just don't have it in front of me.
Well, I don't want you to eat up your time looking for a document that you don't have in front of you.
I would say I believe I've answered the court's question. I believe that the arbitrator has latitude to interpret the contract, found a conflict between Article 3 and Article 42 based on the purpose of Article 3's protection for the union's bargaining rights. And I believe that that answers the court's question. As to a few of the points that were raised by the appellant, the City of Baxter case, it is important that, I mean, the City of Baxter case, the specific language that was found to limit the subcontracting rights was more specific than the language at issue here. But the important aspect of that case, as to how it pertains here, is that the limitation found was still language within the contract itself. And the arbitrator's role here is to interpret the contract and say what it means. And that is the important aspect of how that case would pertain here.
So, okay, then applying that principle, how do you think the arbitrator did in interpreting this provision? Nothing in this agreement shall prohibit or restrict the right of the employer from contracting with vendors or others for materials or services.
And I do believe I've already answered that question, and that the arbitrator looked to the language that was presented to him, looked to what the purpose of the language was, and found that the definition of temporary workers did have a purpose which created a conflict with that language.
So then, I just want to be clear. So what the arbitrator did and what you're advocating is an inference that we might draw from a definition is sufficient to overcome the express waiver by the union of any right to prohibit or restrict the right of the employer from contracting. We have an express, clear, no restriction. Nothing in this agreement should be interpreted as a restriction. And your view is that we should interpret by implication this definition as a restriction, and you think that's appropriate for contract interpretation?
For interpretation of a labor agreement by an arbitrator, that is sufficient. In part, that is the arbitrator's role.
And do you have a case that supports that theory, that an arbitrator's role is met appropriately by disregarding an express waiver of a right to restrict the employer by finding an inference from a definition in a different section defining a different thing?
I can't remember the citation offhand. I believe the case is, I believe it's Ramsey County versus AFSCME Council 14. I believe this was a court of appeals decision. And that was a case in which the arbitrator very, very specifically found that there was a practice within the administration of the labor agreement that was very contrary to the written language and imposed the practice rather than the written language, and that decision was upheld.
There's something else that the arbitrator did that struck me as unusual, and I wanted to see if you agree with the arbitrator. The arbitrator said the language in Article 3 defining temporary worker was more specific in applying to this case than the language of Article 42 in either Section 1 or 2. Do you agree?
I don't recall if that was among the arbitrator's findings. I know that was one of the positions that was raised by the union for the arbitration. But
assume for the sake of argument that I'm remembering, I could be wrong, but I believe I'm remembering correctly. The arbitrator made some reference to applying the more specific language and thought that Article 3 was somehow more specific than Article 42. Do you agree with that proposition?
I would agree with that proposition.
How?
Because Article 3 imposes a specific limitation on the length of time that certain workers are performing roles. But that is my time.
Even though these workers that were involved here were not the kind of workers that were described in Article 3?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but
I don't think the union has never taken the position, has it, that the contracted engagement was for temporary workers, as that term is used in Article 3?
I mean, that more or less is the question posed to the arbitrator by the union, both by the union and the employer, basically framing of whether there is a 6-month limitation on contracted workers.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appellant.
Thank you, Your Honor. Briefly, there was no evidence presented by either side of past practice in this case. Sometimes arbitrators use past practice to understand contract language. Some sometimes even try to use it to override clear contract language. But there was no past practice evidence presented by either side. The questions Your Honor was asking about, is it logical to use Article 3 defining length for temporary employees to limit a completely independent and separate article about subcontracting? It's not logical. That's why this is one of those rare examples of an arbitrator dispensing his own brand of industrial justice. When the Baxter case, the limitation on subcontracting was right in their equivalent to Article 42 for the hospital. If there's going to be a limit, as you said, that's where it would be. And finally, the Supreme Court's description of a court's role, giving all the normal deference to an arbitrator's decision, still said courts need to look to see if there was specific language that precluded the arbitrator from deciding as he did, or something specific in the submissions. And we submit, Your Honor, that both those things were present, and that shows that the arbitrator exceeded his powers and is the basis for vacating this award. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you to both parties for your briefing and for your oral argument this morning. Your engagement with us is well appreciated and very helpful.